Hello, fellow Rebel Capitals. Hope you're well. Wanted to go over an article from Zero Hedge that I think you'll find fascinating. And then at the end, I want to go ahead and connect some dots. I've been giving this quite a bit of thought this afternoon, and I was listening to a podcast on Real Vision with Luke Groman and Andres Steno Larsson. And when I listened to their podcast, I had kind of that light bulb moment. And I think this Zero Hedge article kind of ties it all in. I want to be very clear. I'm not making a prediction, and I'm not saying that this is actually what's happening when we get into the article. I'm just kind of thinking out loud and saying, maybe this is something we should consider here. Maybe this is something that we should think about. So let's get over to this article. Let me do a screen share. And we're going to fire over to Zero Hedge. Title of the article is Dutch Farmers Prepare to Fight Government Overreach by Gaining Financial Freedom with Bitcoin. Okay. And first thing I want to point out is I was listening to a podcast from Tom Woods the other day where he interviewed a journalist that had actually been boots on the ground there with the Dutch farmers, talking to them, interviewing them, hearing their opinion, their side of the story, what their major concerns were. And what he pointed out, and what's hard for a lot of Americans to grasp, is that the farmland these most of them own has been in their family like literally hundreds of years, like longer than the United States has been a country. And to them, this isn't just about farming. This is about their entire lineage. And their big concern is that above and beyond them not being able to farm and provide for their family and being completely put out of business and their lives destroyed, above and beyond that, what they think is happening is the government, and maybe under the influence of the Davos types, is intentionally trying to put them out of the business, using climate change as kind of the smokescreen or just the narrative to get that job done. And they believe, or one of their, I don't want to say they all believe, because it's painting too broad of a brush, but, or too broad of a stroke, I should say. But some of them have an intuitive hunch that maybe what's happening here are the Davos types are trying to influence the politicians to do this via the battle cry of climate change, just so they can come in and buy all of this land at pennies on the dollar, so that Bill Gates and Klaus can come in and say, oh, yep, too bad you can't farm your farm anymore. Too bad you can't use it to produce. But don't you worry about that, because you can just sell it back to the government. And then magically, you know, Klaus controls the politicians who control the land, and now all of a sudden, effectively, it's under the control of the global elite, very similar to the way the Germans in the 1930s, you guys know what I'm talking about, pretty much controlled the means of production, although they didn't technically own the corporations. They just influenced them to such a great degree. It was pretty much one and the same, just economic fascism. And I think this is kind of the public private partnership that the Davos types talk about all the time. So now that we've kind of set up the scene here, let's go through this article. As government entities continue to oppress farmers in the Netherlands, Bitcoin stands ready to help those in need. And so why I titled, or why I used the title I did for this video, is one, I'm kind of using the Dutch farmers synonymously with the Canadian truckers. And you'll remember that one of the main problems that Canadian truckers had is their purchasing power was someone else's liability, meaning their Canadian dollars were a liability of whatever bank they were using. And if one of these politicians or Klaus types can influence the entity that hold your asset as their liability, you could find yourself in a position where your asset is no longer your asset. And that's what the truckers found, right? Where their assets were frozen. Russian Central Bank, same thing. Dutch farmers. I mean, is it a stretch to think that if they continue this protest, if they continue to have success, that their bank accounts won't be frozen. I mean, it's pretty much standard operating procedure now with the Trudeau types and the guy that runs the Netherlands. I forgot what his name is, but he seems to be falling right in line with Trudeau and Merkel and all those people that are kind of, again, under the wing, the tutelage of Klaus and Bigglesworth. Okay, so if those Canadian truckers would have had physical gold, or if they would have had Bitcoin, then you see where I'm going with this. Now, all of a sudden, we as citizens who value liberty and freedom and want to push back against the authoritarians, we could have transferred them purchasing power without having to rely on the rail system, if you will, of the commercial banking system, which is under the control at the end of the day of the state. So now maybe I think there is an argument there saying, well, physical gold, how do you do that? And what are you going to mail it to them? And I agree that there's some difficulty there. And Bitcoin, what if they just seize the on-ramps and the off-ramps? What are you going to do then, George? I get it. But I think the more this happens in the future, there's going to be more minds and more people working on solutions to these problems. But as of right now, pretty much the only asset I can think of that isn't someone else's liability is Bitcoin and gold. Because you can say, well, real estate, okay, but it's still really, you're kind of at the mercy of not paying property taxes. And there's a lot of, I just don't think it's as safe at the end of the day as a piece of gold that's in your back pocket, or Bitcoin that's on your storage thing that you have in your back pocket or something like that. So again, not perfect solutions, but I'm just kind of trying to think down the road, like 3 years, 5 years. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we as concerned citizens who value freedom could transfer and help out these Dutch farmers or whoever the next Dutch farmers are, if we could help them by sending them purchasing power to so that they could buy whatever it is that they need to buy to make sure that they're continuing to be able to stand up for freedom, liberty, and free market capitalism. And that's one of the reasons why I say, you know, the price of Bitcoin really isn't it isn't even close to the most interesting thing about Bitcoin for me personally. I know most people that are in Bitcoin and even that aren't in Bitcoin, that's all they focus on, where the price going. And okay, you know, it's fun to think about, but again, that's like last in line as far as what I think about when I try to understand where we could go with Bitcoin in the future and what value it has potentially to society. So it's week four of the Dutch farmer uprising in Netherlands, and there is no sign of resolution as farmers refuse to give up their farms. Government refused to back down with regulations requiring farmers to reduce their nitrogen beyond the point that they can continue farming. So again, if they can't continue farming, what are they going to do? They're going to sell their farms. Okay, well, who's going to buy these farms that theoretically you can't grow food on anymore, or you can't raise cattle? No other farmers are going to do that. No investors are going to do that. So then insert Gates, Klaus, and the government, or maybe not in that order, but you know, I mean, at this point, they're pretty much all one and the same as far as just one influences the other. The Dutch government issued a plan in June laying out nitrogen emission reductions, largely targeted the country's agricultural industry. There is not a future for all farmers, they said, calling it an unavoidable transition. And again, remember, guys, one of the red flags and one of the truth serums that we have is to ask ourselves how you would quantify success. If we were all sitting in a room with one of these Dutch politicians, or with the, you know, anyone in this article that's saying that, oh, sorry, Dutch farmers, you lose. If we asked them, how would you quantify success? would they have an answer? How will you quantify what this will do to further your objectives? Let's say to reduce climate change. How are you going to quantify that? And just wait for their answer. Because the answer is you can't. The answer is, we can't exactly quantify it, but we have to do something now to combat it. And okay, well, what if this doesn't, how are you going to determine whether or not this is working? We can tell, blah, 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 blah. No, you can't. You can't tell that this is moving the needle. Because as the Dutch farmers stop farming, and let's just say their nitrogen levels go down to a level that they deem acceptable, even though they can't quantify the total results. Why? Because the middle class in Colombia is growing and they're going from using bicycles to motorcycles. So while the Dutch farmers are getting screwed and the politicians are giving you these mandates, basically, that have no quantifiable way to determine success or not, you've got people in all these emerging markets that are rising up, and as they're rising up out of poverty, they're using more fossil fuels. So you see where I'm going with this. So, I mean, the Dutch government could be doing something that on net balance, it doesn't even matter. And this is how you can tell that they don't care about the environment. They don't care about climate change. They don't care about anything other than usurping power and control. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts, Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out of control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. This is an agenda. This is not, and the agenda has nothing to do with climate change, even though they say it does. And again, the way that you tell is if there is no quantifiable way to measure success, that's when it doesn't pass the sniff test. That's when your spidey senses should be on high alert. I think that's probably the best way to say it. So the politicians and the Davos types are saying this is an unavoidable transition. The government mandated reductions in emissions of up to 70% in many areas close to protected land and as high as 95% in others. The plan in practice means in certain areas, farmers have to reduce their nitrogen emission by 70%, said climate change researcher. Okay, so now I want to think through an idea Luke Groman had when he was talking to Andreas Stena Larsson on one of the more recent Real Vision podcasts, the Daily Briefing. And Luke was talking about this idea that the Treasury was, and this was not his base case, I want to be clear. He was just kind of throwing out the idea and saying, okay, there's probably above a 0% probability that this may be happening. But he said that We could see the Treasury weaponizing the Fed. Those were the words he used. Why? Because you see the West trying to sanction Russia and do all these things to push back against Putin and blah, 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 blah. Are they working? Doesn't look like it to me. It looks, and you could argue that, sure, it's hurting the Russian economy. Okay, is it not hurting the European economy? Is it not hurting the U.S. economy? I mean, to what degree? I mean, are we going to sit here and say that it's hurting the Russians more than the Europeans? Really? Maybe, maybe not. But Luke's point is it's very tough to use sanctions against Putin because he's got the balance sheet capacity. They got 7% debt to GDP. He's basically a dictator. And what you're doing is kind of pissing in the wind, for lack of a better term, and it's hurting your own people more, especially as everything that you do to combat Putin actually helps him in a certain way. Because as you're combating him, what's happening to the price of oil and natural gas? Okay, it's going through the roof. And even though he's selling it at a discount, the gross revenue coming into Russia has exploded higher. It's higher now than it was in, whatever, 2019 or prior to the invasion. So what you need to do if you really want to push back against Putin is you need the price of oil to go down, not up. How do you do that? You weaponize the Fed. So what happens is there's something, and I'm sure you guys have heard me talk about this on my whiteboard videos, as far as an interest rate differential. So if the Fed is raising rates and the ECB is lowering rates or keeping rates at zero or not raising rates at the same pace, this is going to be wildly bullish in the short term for the dollar. You know, same thing, ECB, I mean, insert the central bank. So this is one of the dynamics that we've seen at play recently that has taken the dollar up to, say, 107 on the DXY. Okay, the higher the dollar goes against your local currency, the more economic pain that inflicts, especially if you're a country that's got a lot of dollar-denominated debt. I mean, I would use Colombia as a perfect example there. So if you look at their government debt to GDP, 35% of their overall debt is denominated in dollars. So that's not good. And that's one of the reasons why you've seen the peso go from whatever it was, 3,800 to maybe 4,500, something like that. So if the Fed continues to raise rates, then this weaponizes the dollar to a certain degree, because it wipes out a lot of economic output in these emerging markets and other countries. Well, Luke also pointed out that in the past couple of years, we've made this transition to where the largest consumer of energy is not the West. It's actually the emerging markets. See where I'm going with this? So if you can weaponize the Fed to continue to raise rates, which theoretically makes the dollar continue to go up, you destroy the economies of all these emerging markets that are doing what? Using fossil fuel, and less demand that you have there. What does that do to price? Brings it down. So I think, and I don't want to put words in Luke's mouth, and he didn't articulate this view in detail, but this is kind of what I gathered from listening to that. And one of the things that really, well, another light bulb that kind of went off is I remember seeing on CNBC Janet Yellen coming out and now all of a sudden saying that we should just do business with quote unquote friendly countries, pretty much saying the exact same thing that Putin is saying. I'm like, wait a minute, what does Janet Yellen have to do with any of that? She's the Treasury Secretary. Why? What does she have to do with our policy towards Putin or Ukraine or anything? I mean, come on, right? So it's like, well, wait a minute here. Is she getting neck deep in all of this political rhetoric regarding Ukraine and Russia? Well, why? Well, there you go. Maybe the Powell, Yellen, all of them are trying to create this environment where we bring Putin to his knees by bringing all the emerging markets to their knees, by reducing demand for what Putin is selling, and therefore reducing his revenues. Basically, the Treasury weaponizing the Fed, or Janet Yellen weaponizing the Fed, or Biden administration, or maybe Klaus through Biden administration, through Yellen, through Powell, weaponizing the Fed, you see? Because if all these emerging markets start having economic problems, well, then what happens? Well, you've got all these corporations that are going to be far more susceptible to being influenced, let's say, and then they're going to try to get those dollars they need. Well, what if there's no swap line? What if they can't get the dollars? Who's the lender of last resort? Oh, that's right. It's the IMF. How could we forget? So what happens is the emerging markets have problems, and then you get all the assets in the emerging markets. Either they sell for pennies on the dollar to who?
I don't know.
Whoever's standing at the door with cash. I don't know, maybe Bill Gates. I'm just throwing it out there, right? And again, I'm not saying this is what's happening. I'm just saying this is interesting to kind of think about. So they're selling everything, you know, fire selling, and maybe it's harder for them to grow food. Maybe you have all of these types of crazy policies we're seeing in the Netherlands implemented in other. I know for sure they're being implemented, or regulations like the policies like this are being implemented in New Zealand. Because I talked to Chris McIntosh about it. He's been talking about this for a year and a half now. And so you see how we could be going into this setup by the Fed raising rates, making the dollar increasingly stronger, where there's going to be a lot of entities around the United States, or excuse me, around the world, that are going to want to sell their assets, the means of production, the means to produce food, i.e. farmland, at pennies on the dollar. And so I don't know if it's just the Treasury weaponizing the Fed. Maybe it's the IMF weaponizing the Fed, because they know the higher that dollar goes, the more leverage they're going to have over those emerging markets, because they are the dollar lender of last resort. And so you kind of think about, well, how do we go from owning stuff to you'll own nothing and you'll be happy? Maybe it's via the dollar. Maybe it's via the Fed. And maybe it's via the Fed and they don't even know it. Maybe they're just a useful idiot in the whole scheme. I don't know. Again, I want to be very, very clear. I'm not saying this is what's happening behind the scenes. I'm just saying it's, once I heard Luke talk about that, and then, you know, understanding what I understand about how the IMF works and how the Fed works and what happens with the dollar and the global dollar denominated debt and what happens with the emerging markets and how this puts them into a squeeze and what's happening with the Dutch farmers and how they're getting all this pressure from the politicians and they're getting pressure from the World Economic Forum and they're trying to get them to sell potentially for pennies on the dollar. And this is the exact same thing that would happen if the dollar increased in all these emerging markets. And let's remember, what are the three objectives to the Davos types, the global elites? I've gone over this in my live presentations over the past few months and on these videos. Number one is to reduce energy use globally. Number two, reduce population growth globally. Number three, usurp power, control, and wealth. So if you're trying to reduce one and two, where's a target-rich environment? Well, it's all these countries that are growing, that are continuing to use more and more fossil fuels, and where the demographics are good and where they're prone to have more children. That'd be the emerging markets. And those would be the areas that would have the most problems with the Fed raising rates, increasing the interest rate differential, and taking the dollar up with it. It's food for thought. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your evening. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.